Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. You're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, stevepick.com as well. A beautiful, crisp November day here in upstate New York. When I say crisp, I'm not kidding. I had to bring out Tina finished the seasonal yard work over the weekend, last weekend, and we must have had 16 bags of lawn, you know, leaves and trimming and all kinds of crap. So I had to drag it all out there this morning, and I had to go back in the house and get gloves. It was cold, and now you got to sweat out that they bring it all. There's nothing worse, right, than bringing everything. I don't know if you have to deal with this. You bring everything out to the street, and then they for some reason, they don't take something. You got to drag it all back, take it to the dump or what. I kid you not. And then she also managed to. She managed to do a bunch of stuff in the basement, and so I had to bring all kinds of recycly-ish things out to the street. I kid you not, I spent, when I should have been finalizing my Indiana Grand Pick 5 Challenge ticket, which I still have to finalize, I was tracking garbage out to the street. We've got a couple of Indiana visits today because it's closing day at Indiana Grand. They have had a fabulous season, just a record-setting season, and Eric Hallstrom is going to join us here in the first hour, and then we'll do some handicapping later with Bill Downs. This Pick 5 Challenge, which is really a nice gesture, they're seeding and greetings to Veterans Day, of course, 11th day of the 11th month, 11th hour. Thoughts and appreciation to all that have served and serve, continue to. But the seeding of this Pick 5, the last Pick 5 pool of the season at Indiana, They're putting 50,000 in, and a number of us are going to be included for this Pick 5 Challenge. And they actually gave us $250 they're going to put in and with these tickets. And it's a much, you know, that's a much bigger budget than I certainly typically will use in a Pick 5. But I'll say this, when Bill joins us, Bill Downs, and he and I go through this last Pick 5 of the season, it's going to come in handy, the $250, because this is not an easy sequence by any means. The feature, which is a non-winners of four, is very good, actually. And it slightly offsets a maiden 5,000 for Indiana Breds that will absolutely curl your hair. There's a dozen in there that have really struggled. Let's just put it that way. And that's a messy, messy race. That's the second leg of the Pick 5. So it's difficult in its own right. The opener is no bargain. It's an open company maiden special weight for two-year-old fillies, and it's got half a dozen first-timers, including that Como Square, the Caddo River sibling that we talked about with Brad Cox. And it feels like that one or the Karamori Call Me Penny, those feel like the two to start with. And you know, if you were on a budget, that's who you would start with. But there are a couple of others. There's a horse moving over to the main track from the turf that isn't impossible, I suppose, Bodieful. There's another firster, Aaron West, Carly Q Blue. There's actually a firster that is going to be a little bit of a price, actually, that scares me a little bit. Toto's Ruby Slippers. Stephen Dunn. He's been working at High Point. It's actually a full this is a toneless filly and is a full to just trying to pull her up. Saria. And as it happens, despite this being a tonalist out of a Pleasant Tap mare, the mare was, her name was Saria. She was 0-9. But she wasn't hopeless either. And as it happens, the full sister, who's a three-year-old, she's got two wins. And she actually, as a sprinter, she ran fast enough to win a race like this. So Toto's Ruby Slippers doesn't seem impossible. Stephen Dunn, very selective with his starters. This is a homebred. Debbie and David Clay. It's an interesting race, and the fact that you got Caddo River's sister in here, Como Square, for John Ed Anthony. Debuts without Lasix. Everybody else among the debuters, well, almost all. There's one other on the outside. But they're it's a tricky little start. My inclination is to spread a little bit in that opener. You know, you want to get started. You want to try to drive yourself deep into this sequence, right? So we'll talk to Bill Downs a little before 11, and we'll get Bill's take. Final pick five opportunity of the season. The 11.99% pick five that pays well. In fact, yesterday, he had two big prices. In fact, it probably would have only taken one more $20 or more winner yesterday in Indiana to trip a, you know, potentially a carryover. But instead, after you had a 22.80 and a 23.80, you then had formful results the rest of the way. You had a $6 winner, a 4.60, and a 6.80. Second choice, a favorite, and a second choice. So It got predictable after the first two prices. But what's interesting is when looking at today's sequence, you know it's very notable that you had this, you know, 10-1 pair of, you know, 10 and an 11-1 shot. You know, one was Indiana bred claimers for a nickel, and one was an allowance. And so it makes you, you know, looking at today's sequence, you say to yourself, well, you know, the first four prices, the first four favorites are, you know, very logical, and you know, but that's what's tricky. You look at that second tier, and you start looking at the 8-1s and the 10-1s, and you realize, I mean, all you got to do is look at yesterday's result. So The pick five yesterday, 1,200, I think, 11-something, right? 1,229 yesterday. They did 2 million again yesterday. They had a big card. They had two, closed it out with two quarter horse races. Today they close out with one, but the Thoroughbred action closes with the Salute the Hero. The sequence starts at 5 o'clock Eastern with race 6. And racing starts at 2:25. There is a little bit of wet. There is. I did check the weather, and there is a little bit of rain in the forecast for fairly early in the afternoon, by like 1 to 3. So they might get a little bit of moisture, but this sequence, by, you know, if things work out, we'll see what Eric has to say. And speaking of saluting heroes, he was feted yesterday as a veteran, which was kind of nice if you were watching the action. We will talk to Pat McKenna as well today. We'll check in with Pat at Aqueduct, day one, opening day for the Big A. And we'll be at Aqueduct now for November, December, January, February, March, into right beginning of April. And first the fall season, and then the winter unfolds. So, well, I wanted Pat to swing in. We touched on it with Andy a little bit, not really, but the recap numbers were released yesterday for Belmont. They had a very good Belmont fall, and we'll get some of the details from Pat about, you know, the resumption of attendance at Aqueduct. And looking forward to getting down there. And in fact, there's even, if the racing gods allow, if they actually use this state bred maiden race for Sunday, today, there was an extra on the overnight. We've been waiting to run with Scherzando for three weeks. So there's a chance, I think, the fact that it showed back up on they came back with a state bred maiden race. Hopefully he gets to run. So might make an early season visit to the Big A as early as Sunday. The weekend is going to end up it might get very busy in a hurry, because we're going to go down to Connecticut today and see my father. Tina's off today, so we're going to go see my dad, and then I think we're going to go see the babies. We're going to go see Lennon and Callum. So, and then turn around potentially and go Sunday to Aqueduct. So a lot going on. We'll check in with Tony Black. I've got two Breeders' Cup topics for Tony. I want him to talk about the difficulties in the gate and get a jock perspective. We had pretty much, I think, every perspective so far that we've talked to this week, most notably at the beginning of the week when Bob Duncan joined us. And Mike Hopkins, we talked about the technical aspect. I want Tony to explain, you know, what's going on when you're aboard a horse in those tight quarters, and the horse next to you starts to get worked up and agitated, and so forth. So let Tony discuss that. And also, I mentioned yesterday the fine, Florent Giroux and E.T. Baird, both taking hits for one extra use of the crop, and I want Tony to address that as well. So we'll catch up with Tony today. In addition, and we got to get to Rich Eng. I mean, I'm embarrassed that we missed Rich the 2 weeks leading up to Breeders' Cup. So I got to get to Rich Eng today as well. So there you go. Oh, and Sean Clancy. And Clancy, while everybody was busy with Breeders' Cup, Sean was winning a race at Montpelier. So we'll talk to Sean at 10:30 today. And catch up with him, get his Breeders' Cup impressions as well. Although, like I said, he was busy. He was busy in Virginia, winning a race. And we'll get those results in too. So, Eric Hallstrom. Oh, and we'll start out in a couple of minutes here, about 5 minutes away from Joe Nevels as well from Pollock Report. We'll get Joe's Keeneland Day One numbers and storylines. Very solid start at Keeneland with Paris Lights, as Brian DiDonato and or Nicole Russo had suggested. Paris Lights was going to be, you know, the big enchilada on the first go-round, the first set of sales action at Keeneland yesterday. $3.1 million to Spendthrift. The Japanese were very active again, and we'll let Joe walk you through that. And there was also quite a bit of interesting movement when it comes to racing prospects that might stay in training. We'll get some answers on that front. And there was plenty of notable six-figure weanlings. I mean, the weanling situation is really pronounced, what's going on. $800,000 for the Frankel filly that Phil Schoenthal bought for Hatman Thoroughbreds, and Donato Lanny paid $600,000 for the quality road colt for the Chews for Bioma. So that story we brought up with Brian DiDonato yesterday about people not even going to wait for for the yearling market. They're gonna buy weanlings, and I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on. So we'll get Joe's impression. He of course is doing a nice job with the newsletter, the Bloodstock newsletter for the Pollock Report. So Joe Nevels, Eric Hallstrom, Tony Black, Sean Clancy, Bill Downs, Pat McKenna, and Rich Eng. There you go. That's a full agenda. I'll save this for. I'll save that baby for Eric Hallstrom in about 20 minutes or so. Oh, kind of a not a great piece of news regarding English Channel. If you didn't see this yesterday, English Channel, Calumet yesterday announced that he's not, almost certainly not going to be available for covers, and it's really too bad. You know, English Channel has just, you know, really taken root, and you know, especially among, you know, those that are patient and can, you know, let progeny mature. And, you know, he's had another terrific year, and he's the leading turf sire in North America this year. He's 19. They did not specify if this is a, I mean, you wouldn't think it's a fertility issue. It sounds, you know, potentially like a something physical. You know, sometimes it's their, you know, in their backs. It's a strenuous activity. I mean, don't make no mistake. So they didn't get into details, but no English Channel. I'll save this actually for Sid maybe for next week, because undoubtedly. There were people that, you know, were already booked and lined up. So that's a tough piece of news. We'll reach for Joe Nevels here. In case, let me give you Joe's in case you don't have it at hand. There you go, little Joe Nevels, and we've got some of the weekend action to talk about as well as the day unfolds. You've got some nice cards that were drawn for Saturday. And I should mention, we'll find out later today, I'm going to guess. Don't forget, for those of you that qualified for the Beat Pick, we got a seat to give away on Saturday. Yeah. You should have gotten your mail. I think everybody got the mailer about, you know, going to horse players and locking in your ticket for Saturday. And we'll look to award a seat for January for the NHC. All right. So looking forward to that, and we'll get the race details. Should be a real meat and potato kind of a day, right? For Saturday. There's some stakes. We got the big matchup at Churchill when it comes to the Sconson and Bell's the One. You got that to look forward to, the $300,000 Dream Supreme, the race that the two of them pointed for, as opposed to making the trip out to California. And there's also the presence of, I should mention, it's not just Sconson and Bell's the One, because Ben Colebrook has got Club Car coming back out of that excellent effort in the TCA. So this is a nice little feature. Frank's Rocket as well, trying to snap back. It was kind of a disappointment in the TCA. So a nice group in the Dream Supreme. I'm not sure if that's going to be part of the race lineup, but you got the Desi Arnaz as well out at Del Mar, and the Artie Schiller and New York, and so I'm sure it'll be a nice mix of races. It was a nice mix of sale items at Keeneland to start off the big November bloodstock sale. Joe Neville's tracking the action for Pollock Report. Joe, good morning.
Chief, always glad to be on. Good morning.
Good morning, and before we talk the results from yesterday, and you can also provide some feedback about Night of Stars and what your impressions were from Fasig on Monday, or Tuesday. But how about a quick Breeders' Cup thought from you? How'd you make out?
So the only race that I played was, basically, I picked the only Japanese horse that didn't have a giant weekend on Breeders' Cup. I picked Jasper Great in the Juvenile. I made him my public pick on the Haiku Handicapper, and he was giving decent odds, so I figured I'd plunk a few bucks on him. And, you know, he ran into some trouble. I think losing Jack Christopher from the one hole on the inside probably hurt him a little bit, because all of a sudden he had the rail sort of blocking him, and he had some traffic that he dealt with. So I think he had some excuses, but, you know, excuses don't pay the bills. So that was kind of my one sort of Bomarowski play, and didn't really pan out for me. My Haiku Handicapper picks, though, did get the winning exacta in the Classic. I will not claim victory, though, because I did not play the exacta, so it's not like I made the, like, 60-some dollars, whatever it got, unfortunately.
What did you make of, you know, from a bloodstock perspective, the results? Obviously, you know, 7 of the 14 domestic and 7 of the 14 international, of the international variety.
Well, if there were any question going into it, I think that is firmly answered, that Gunrunner is for real. I mean, Echo Zulu just freaked in the Juvenile Fillies, and, you know, it's, I don't think if, I think Connect is in second place right now. I'd have to go back and see if he's, like, mathematically eliminated from passing Gunrunner at this point. But I feel like a Connect, or any freshman sire could win every single two-year-old race left on the calendar and still not be able to catch Gunrunner. I could be wrong on that, but I think Gunrunner has, like, mathematically clinched freshman sire title at this point. And good for him. He's run much better than I expected his two-year-olds to run at this point in the game. He was a good two-year-old, not a top-level elite two-year-old, but he was a very good two-year-old. But I think kind of the conventional wisdom was they're going to be fine at two, wait until they're three, and they're going to get real, real good during classic season. And he's moved those goalposts up to as quick as possible. And I think that's, I mean, the economy's already proven that out. Like, people are going nuts for the Gunriders right now for how quick they're starting.
Well, and we're seeing that, obviously, with the, you know, we already had some of the early, you know, hints and watching what's happening from the sales standpoint. And when we talk about the Wheeling results from yesterday, there was one Gunrunner I know. The one that Narvik bought, the Colt, $380,000. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, when it comes to the opportunity to snare some, you know, maybe, you know, at a little bit of a discount, you can sense that people are taking that opportunity. Go back to September and at Keeneland and so forth. Let's in fact dive into the discussion. And before we talk about Wednesday at Keeneland, how about the Tuesday action at Phasing? What did you make of the record-setting evening?
I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. It was a record-setting evening. They put over $100 million worth of horse flesh to the ring. And if there were any doubts that the market was not going to carry over from the record-setting pace that it set during the yearling season, that's blown out the window. I mean, we still have to prove what the middle market's going to do, but all you can do is set the pace at this point, and they set incredible fractions going through. Big participation from international buyers. I thought I saw a tweet somewhere that Japanese buyers accounted for like 30% of the total gross at the Phasing Tipton sale on Tuesday, which is just incredible. And, you know, sort of continues the trend. Like, I think what happened with the Breeders' Cup with the Japanese connections winning two races is just going to be a warning shot for what's going to come in the future, because Japanese bloodlines are, in many cases, American bloodlines that have come over. So it should translate pretty well to future success in American racing. We had Kate Hunter on our Friday show not too long ago. Kate Hunter is the field rep for Japan for the Breeders' Cup, and also recruits for Keeneland and a lot of other different sort of American organizations. And she said that Japanese connections are usually focusing on their own races during this time of the year, not necessarily sending the best over. But if you can send a good horse over here, that's with American bloodlines that could translate. I think now that they've proven they can win it, you're going to see that a lot more often. And that starts with buying big brood mares at the Phasing Tipton November sale and at Keeneland November.
Well, the Asian purchase scenario, not a new storyline, certainly, when we get to November sales, but it does seem pronounced here, you know, 2 days into the November season, Joe. And, you know, yesterday, I mean, all you got to look up and down this list, and, you know, Masahiro Miki, Pink Sands for 2.3. You had Mr. Yoshida active again yesterday, spending $800,000 and $850,000 for Horologist and Lucky Dime, who's in full to Medaglia d'Oro, Shade Farm, and on and on. Ever Union Shokai bought Maxim Rate. Give us some thoughts about the top mare purchases yesterday.
Well, I just want to go on with that thought for a little longer before I do.
Sure.
So, big international participation. The Australians also bought very big during the first 2 days of selling in Kentucky in November. The borders just opened up for international travel just days ago in terms of vaccinated travelers, like being able to sort of come and go freely without, you know, heavy restrictions. And both Phasing Tipton's Boyd Browning and Keeneland's Tony Lacey and Shannon Arbin noted just how big of a difference that's made, that international, you know, if not principals, at least like the right hands of principals have shown up in person, and that just changes the whole ballgame. Tony Lacey mentioned yesterday that online bidding at Keeneland was down quite a bit because a lot of those international connections that would be watching from home, bidding at home, were there in person. So it's changed the dynamic, and we know from years of, you know, Sheikh Mohammed coming to the Keeneland sales and, you know, having the Coolmore connections in person that top dollar connections will always raise their hand one or two more times if they're there in person versus if they're on the phone or online. And I think that's a big economic driver that came at the exact perfect time.
Well, expand on what impressions came away from yesterday.
Well, I think it's a continuation of what we've seen, to borrow a phrase from David Tipton's Boyd Browning. That's kind of how he starts all the major sort of post-session pressers. The top of the market's performing extremely well, and that's all kind of all we have to go from so far. As I mentioned earlier, we'll see our true answers of how the market is doing once we get to the middle market sessions, but so far, so good. For yesterday's Keeneland November session, gross was up by 1%, average was up by 10%, median was up by 17%, and you always take those numbers with a bit of a grain of salt because 2020 was so weird that, you know, it's hard to really say whether that's an accurate gauge of where the market is or was. So I went back to 2019 before COVID locked everything down and the market was humming at a record pace. And it's still holding really consistent. The average is only down about $1,000, so we can call that practically a draw. Median last year for the first session was $300,000. And yesterday it was $330,000, so we're up there. So this is a market that is continuing along as expected. I think any fears that there might be some sort of lingering after effects from, you know, the COVID shutdowns, any sort of economic uncertainties, that's not there at this point in the market. Whether it changes in the middle market, I don't think it will, but we haven't seen anything that suggests that we have sort of back to the usual stride now.
How about what we saw here? Certain names keep cropping up, and kind of themes. Certainly the season for, you know, purchasing mares to take to specific new stallions in support. This is always an interesting element, and Spendthrift yesterday, Paris Lights, 3,100,000, Stone Street with the pair of purchases, downside scenario, 1,150,000, and she's carrying an Into Mischief baby, the other 850,000 for Vault, the Jumpstart mare. I mentioned obviously the Japanese. You know, one name, and it's funny, I reached out to Bart Evans the other day after you know, the success that that his, you know, wonderful race mare, Wasted Tears, the Nazrin mare, she, you know, gets Corniche, who wins the juvenile, and then she turns up again here on the sales front because Look Me Over, the 4-year-old hardspun daughter, in foal to Kitten's Joy, fetches $1.2 million to Mount Brilliant.
Yeah, that's, you know, this is the time when we're preparing for, you know, making the decisions that'll affect matings in 2022 and foals from there on out. You know, you mentioned Look Me Over was purchased by Mount Brilliant Farm. They're a big commercial operation, so you have to imagine that she's going to be producing some top dollar yearlings in the future. Spendthrift Farm, you know, buying Paris Lights. She could go anywhere. She could go to, the obvious answer would be Into Mischief, because Into Mischief is just getting all the top mares right now. But they have a lot of young stallions that could really use a big profile boost that sending a Paris Lights would bring them. You know, Authentic would be a no-brainer for that. A Son of Into Mischief, who's got a, you know, horse of the year, big resume, who having a mare like Paris Lights in the second book would be a big get. Or, you know, any other new stallions. Really, a horse like Paris Lights, Spendthrift has a lot of options, and all of them would make their stallions look good.
Some some notable hybrid operations too, like Stone Street, which you know, is liable depending on depending on the product, is just as liable to raise some and sell others. And it's amazing, you know, it's one of the under. I don't know if appreciated is the right word, Joe, but certainly it's a storyline that doesn't get even enough headlines, really, what Barbara Bankey has done.
Yeah.
Given the uncertainty after Jess Jackson passed, the expansion and the growth of Stone Street subsequently is really amazing.
Absolutely. And both as a, and they've done it on both sides of the pedigree page too.
Right.
Like, they've, Stone Street has become a reliable source of both stallions and has a world-class broodmare band. It's, you know, there's, it's not like they specialize in one thing and just do that better than everyone else. They're doing everything better than everyone else, practically. They're fourth in the nation right now in terms of, as a breeder, in terms of graded stakes winners. They have six. And 10 total graded stakes wins overall. And, you know, some of those are homebreds. Some of those are ones they've sold. You know, it's not like they're afraid to sell one that has a really good page on it because they want to keep it to race themselves. Like, they put themselves out there in the commercial market, and it seems like no matter what avenue they take, they're being rewarded for it.
I see that the Jacksons as well, they bought Spanish Love Affair, the three-year-old Caracanti Philly, and $775,000 for that one. And, you know, by, speaking of Spanish, in this case, Spanish Love Affair, I also noticed that Gary Barber and on a separate topic, really, but, you know, in the bloodstock trade, I saw where their third place finisher in the Melbourne Cup, Gary Barber and Team Valor, they sold Spanish Mission yesterday or the day before.
You know, I thought I saw a release on that too. That's pretty wild, but you know, that's the business. If you have someone who's right, willing to give you the right price on a horse, you take it.
Well, as I frequently kid, the answer is always yes. That's, when the phone rings, almost
yes,
always.
The right price.
Yeah, exactly. Don't ever dismiss those calls out of hand. But I, you know, the Jacksons, you know, the Jacksons have maintained their program, and you know, I'm going to assume that they're going to go on and let Spanish Love Affair, you know, run again as a four-year-old.
I haven't seen anything to go one way or another. I know they certainly have a very good breeding program. I can't imagine that they would buy her just to, like, run her for 1 year and then put her back on the market. Time will tell.
The beyond the mares, and obviously things continue. Let's touch on the weanling market as well, Joe. Joe Neville's with us from Pollock Report, and boy, I mean, these are, is it me, or are these really big numbers? And it seems like the weanling market is now become an extension of the yearling market.
I think you're on point there. This kind of happened the last time that the market's kind of, that the yearling market hit record numbers a few years back, is that buyers realized they were getting shoved out of where they wanted to be in the yearling market. So they held their bullets for the weanling market and just said, okay, I'll sit on this horse for another year and I'll just get this horse ahead of time and we'll be good. I think that's just sort of a natural, you know, extension of the yearling market, that when you don't get what you want there, you go to the next opportunity, and that next opportunity to buy a young horse is going to be during the weanling market. And that has absolutely played out. Had a $800,000 Frankel filly go at the Keeneland sale yesterday. I think that was going back to Europe, if I'm not mistaken. It's just, you know, and it's surprising because you expect an Into Mischief to bring that kind of weanling money at a, you know, North American sale. I feel like the Frankels have done very well in North America when a yearling goes through the marketplace, but haven't brought that sort of top-of-the-market bell-ringing type of price, or if they have, it's been very rare. So to see a Frankel really succeed here has been a pleasant surprise. I didn't get a chance to look at this one up close, but just from my vantage point in the press box, looks like a very solid filly. Like, I think they'll be just fine with this one.
Quality Road, Donato Lanny bought a colt, $600,000 mentioned. Mattress Mac, Jim McInvale buys an Into Mischief filly, $510,000 that Paramount consigned. Was bred by Drumkenny Farm and Partners and Drumaland and American Equistock out of Truly Gifted. Tracy Farmer, you know, I saw Tracy's name on a couple of lines as well on Tuesday at Fasig, and you know, after having to put his whole breeding and racing operation on pause while he was involved with the KHRC, he's waded back in and has gotten active again.
Yeah, and, you know, when you put your operation on pause for a while, maybe you have a little extra money to play with that wasn't necessarily being spent on horses in the past. So, you know, I don't have a look into his bank account, but it wouldn't surprise me if he felt like he had a little bit more to work with because it wasn't going into, you know, a horse's feed bill somewhere. Could be totally wrong on that, but it seems like that's kind of the overarching theme of the marketplace, is a lot of people are saying, well, I didn't spend as much elsewhere, so let's spend it on horses.
Well, happy to see that black jacket with the white diamond. Long time, like to see Tracy Farmer send a few back to Nick Zito to get the band back together, as it were. $400,000 Into Mischief colt Dino Beccari bought and. This one out of Vanquished. Interesting, there were two high-priced fillies, but mostly colts that that traded. And there's that Gunrunner I mentioned earlier, $380,000. A Vino Rosso weanling colt that the John Gunther bred and out of Fair Huntress, $340,000 that Bolter Bloodstock bought. So there's a first crop stallion notable success in the weanling trade.
The Vino Rosso's have been very well received so far, both at Bays and Tipton and at Keeneland. I'm doing some way too early analysis on the first crop weanling sires so far, and I haven't done the final numbers for Keeneland November yet. But when I was doing them in the middle of yesterday's session between day one of Keeneland November and the Fasig Tipton sale, Vino Rosso was number one by average weanling sale price. And it's proving out. You know, the Gunther family bred Vino Rosso themselves, so, you know, it would make sense that they would have some of the best ones, and that's proving out so far.
Day two at Keeneland. What have you had a chance to look ahead the rest of the week?
Not a ton. I've been so sort of in the weeds with what's right in front of me. I haven't had a lot of time for long-term forecasting. I will say that if the market plays anything like it has for basically the last calendar year, I expect strong trade to continue. I expect a lot of buyers who you would normally expect to see playing around in book one and book two that get their work done and leave to be sticking around into the later books because they're going to have to find mares and foals, they'll have gotten shoved out elsewhere. So if it plays like the fall yearling sales did, which it often tends to, and I think people are very optimistic about how much money a young horse can get you, I think people are willing to reinvest, and they'll be reinvesting heavily in the coming weeks.
We'll continue to track, but the first two big days, both in the books, Keeneland getting started and runs to next Friday, and Fasig kick things off with the Knight of Stars. Joe Nevels will be watching for the terrific backring newsletter that you fashion at Pollock, and I appreciate the updates.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to be on.
Joe Nevels, everybody, the original Michigan-bred claimer. And Joe does a great job covering, and there's a nice array between these 3 days of horse sale that we've been able to cover. The last we have Nicole Russo, and we had Brian DiDonato, and now Joe. So got to trying to spread the wealth and get as many insights from the bloodstock side of things. Plus Sid and Sid's thoughts. Let's turn toward Indiana and some racing conversation, and really the recapping, I suppose, to some degree, because Eric Hallstrom is going to join us next, and I wanted to give Eric a chance to pass out the bouquets to his staff and to the players and to, you know, the owners and the horsemen and everybody that's made this a smashing season for Indiana Grand. So looking forward, and I also want to thank Eric too, because we've had a lot of fun covering the season. And Bill Downs will join us later on, close to the top of hour three, and he and I'll go through this last pick five, and it's a tricky sequence. I'm anxious for some of Bill's insights in this group of races. While we wait for Eric, I can slip in. Oh, I'm glad actually I looked up there. That's for him. There's a toy drive that I don't want to forget. That the jocks are doing today, and I'm sure that if you don't have time to make that happen, you can get over to the track, you know, at any point before the holidays. Let's see, does it have a cutoff date? I'll ask Eric, but just yesterday alone, they 75 toys, and of course Aqueduct 2, Toys for Tots, as well. So any of these that I see, I will pass along. But it did catch my eye that that Indiana was, they had one, and I'm sure there's still a chance. And Eric Hallstrom joins us from Indiana Grand. Eric, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. I had saved that toy drive note that the jocks brought in a bunch yesterday, but is there still an opportunity for people if they want to drop an unwrapped new toy off at the track?
Yeah,
for the...
there is, and Tammy Knox does a great job of coordinating all that. And you got a kick out of it. I saw her driving away yesterday, and her car looked like Santa Claus. There was toys everywhere. And she's driving down to a local place that will distribute those toys to some kids that need them around here. So we'll make sure that those any other toys can get sent to the right spot too.
Nice. Well, one thing that has certainly been right all year long has been the action at Indiana Grand. You've had a wonderful season, and I didn't want it to end without an opportunity for you to, you know, pass out the acknowledgments and the thank yous, because it started strong and really never let up.
Yeah, we're having a heck of a meet. You know, our handle's going to end up somewhere in the 225 million range, and you know, which is just a number, but the last non-COVID year where we had 120 days, the record was set in 2019, and that handle was about 150 million. So we've clearly found at least some spot for success, and we just have such a good team, and I know that you know them, and but you agree how easy they are to work with, but you know, in the end, it comes down to people that sit and watch the races and bet their hard-earned money, and we're very appreciative of them. And I think, you know, the team came up with a good idea for a better appreciation to close the season, and, you know, just kind of let everybody know that we do think about them and understand where, you know, success really comes from. It's not us; it's our customers.
Well, and today with Veterans Day, the seeding of this last pick five, and it really was a novel concept. And you reached out to a bunch of people like me, and you know, said, "Here's a $250 budget, and we'll put the ticket in for you." And it should make for a, you know, should make for a robust pool today. And it's a tough sequence.
It is tough. It really was. And, you know, we've admittedly had some challenges filling races. You know, we're not the only ones. You know, I understand at this point how tough it is to get horses in through your stable gates. But, you know, closing day always seems to be a bumper crop. And, you know, as we put the races together and I saw how it looked on paper, it's tough to say that there's a bunch of singles just jumping out at you, that's for sure.
The season overall, you got to imagine that going forward, knowing what's happening or what isn't going to necessarily happen in Chicago, Eric, I'm imagining that Indiana Grand is going to be you know, the destination for a certain number of horsemen that, you know, and some have already gravitated. All you have to do is look at that roster of outfits that, you know, that populate the entries, and somebody like Tony Granitz, for instance. But, you know, talk about how the season essentially positions you going forward.
It's a really quality point, Steve, and we're already talking about it. I told Chris Polson, our racing director, who's got the long history at Arlington, you know, start tomorrow, he and I go beat the bushes for horses to fill up our barn area next year. And there's no question that Chris has got a lot of contacts in the Chicago area, and we had room for them. It's, you know, it's one of our... It's an odd situation in that we're building another 105-stall barn that will be ready by March, and that's going to help a lot. But when it all is said and done, we've only got 1,200 stalls here when that's done. And, you know, you have to – what we're finding out is you have to be very careful of who goes in those stalls. And because we need people being the entry box, and, you know, we're no different than anybody else. But Chris has a very good understanding of, you know, who would be active with us next year from Chicago. And, you know, like I said, starting Friday, he and I get after recruiting horses for next year. There literally is no time to waste. When your meet runs 8 months, you don't have much of an off season. You got to get working right away. And so he and I will do that, you know, 8 a.m. tomorrow, I guess.
What's the maximum scenario? And I did see, I guess, maybe 2 weeks ago, you had the date process, the approval set for next year. I mean, you know, essentially, you're in it's certainly an advantageous position, but you also have a circumstance where the Indiana bred program has to be fulfilled too, and so, you know, when it comes to open company and you know, balancing the assortment of races, you would assume that, you know, that the open company numbers will be, you know, essentially, you know, have the potential anyway to be maximized.
Indiana's a different spot, and, you know, I've been a part of purse projections and different things in several different jurisdictions, and this is the toughest one I've ever seen part, and maybe it's just a part of the times we're in with, you know, horse population kind of going the wrong way generally. But it's a puzzle here to try to match up what is statutorily required for the Indiana program versus what you do with the open program. And, you know, I would hesitate to say that I think we're going to have a master plan going into 2022 that's perfect, because it's almost like one of those things, like you're in a football game and you're planning on throwing a bunch of long passes, and then they blitz every play and you got to figure out something else. And there's a way to get this thing done, but I really do think it starts, you know, as finding stables and people who, you know, want to participate at a regular and normal and healthy rate for their horses. And if we can do that, we've got plenty of money. You know, the purse money is not lacking. We have 127 days of racing next year, and you know, I would think that we'll be looking at likely a small purse increase to start the year next year. So, you know, the funds are there. You know, now it's just our job to make sure that we can fill these races, and it's not a simple one, that's for sure.
Well, it's been fun. To me, the racing's interesting, and whenever you look at a track that's got a pronounced regional breeding program, Louisiana and Indiana, kind of think of now to a big degree, and you got to get familiar with some of the regional, you know, regional stallions and so forth. But it's been a wonderful season again. I mentioned by name everybody that you want to acknowledge here as the season wraps.
Yeah, we've got a small team here, but you know, the ones that obviously are first and foremost are the big three that, you know, kind of run our marketing and our face of our program, with Tammy, Rachel, and Bill. And they just do a great job, and they're very passionate. I really, really love working with them, and we got a good team here. There's a lot of people behind the scenes as well, Steve, that just work their tails off. And, Chris Polson, it's a long meet for putting together 123 days straight. And, you know, next year we've actually worked in a 10-day break at the end of July into our schedule, because you just get to a tipping point where people need a little breather in there. And I think it'll actually help entries before and after that break. But, we've just had a heck of a year, and the result isn't handled. That's the one measure that we all look at, and you know, there's just no denying that we hit it right out of the park this year, that's for sure.
Well, and you deserve a tremendous amount of credit. We've said it, you know, these last couple of years, given the difficult circumstance that saw the track lose its only manager, essentially, and the tough scenario, and you've really, you know, just elevated Indiana's profile, tremendous attention to horse players, and you've gone out of your way with initiatives, and undoubtedly you'll evaluate everything that went on this season and you know, try to come up with more for 2022.
Yes, thanks. Are you confident in your pick five today, Steve, or should I be looking somebody else's to follow that up with?
Well, it's almost an embarrassment of riches here to throw that $250. I don't even know what to do with that much money because I don't play I don't put that much into my pick five plays, so I'm almost struggling to make final decisions. I'm waiting to see what we've got for scratches, but I the one thing the one thing I've learned, I mean, over the course of the, you know, these last few seasons, is you absolutely need to be cognizant of horses that at first blush seem overmatched and don't seem like they're a fit. And in fact, in the feature today, in that Indiana bred non-winners of four lifetime, there's a number of horses that are marginal contenders that are actually, because it's closing day and because there's not going to be a chance to run against Indiana bred company, you know, from going forward until next year, there's quite a few horses that are basically jumping condition that haven't cleared the three lifetime condition. And so you have to make some very tough evaluations on some horses that, you know, that are close enough from a contender standpoint, and if you can project them, you know, being able to leapfrog the condition, they might be a fit. And they're 6-1, 8-1, 10-1 type. So it's a this is not an easy sequence. And even with the ability to, with this big budget, it's pretty tricky. I'm going to have a base ticket probably of $150, and then I'll put together some backups and try to cover, you know, some of the, you know, some of the potential other outliers. So I would say yes. I given this budget, I feel like I will have no excuse not to hit this sequence.
I like the way you're going to attack that there. I agree with you on one thing here, and I don't get the chance and really have the ability to play our racing, but I look every day, and I, you know, there's been, over the course of the last 123 days, I've seen many times where I've taken note and thought, okay, they stepped this horse up, and, you know, that actual non-winners of two lifetime is equivalent to the three here right now. And so what you're saying is dead on as far as trying to figure out whether those horses are, you know, equally matched, even though they're coming out of maybe a different condition and whatnot. So that, but that's why it's going to pay a bunch today, I have a feeling.
Well, and then you got the big fields. There was a maiden. Let me take a look at that. I'm going to give another example of why these races can be tricky. Here you go. In the first leg, for instance, today, the 5.5 furlong open company maiden special weight, there's a horse that Eduardo Caramori ran at Keeneland in a maiden 50. These are two-year-olds. And now is going to run in this maiden special. And, you know, at a glance, people are going to say, the horse is going up in class. But is he? This was a maiden 50 at Keeneland that actually is probably pretty equivalent to what this group is with this open company maiden special. So there's some very difficult horses to evaluate. There's a horse today from in that same race that Ray Paquette sends out, a keen ice filly, keen eyesight, and happens to be out of a horse. I was shocked, actually, to see her name, Selenite, which anybody in New York is going to remember as a Dave Donk Cosmonaut daughter that was a very nice New York-bred turf mare. And you know, here's a horse that on paper should not debut successfully at 5.5 furlongs, but it is a stake horse, out of a stake horse. So I don't know. I think the budget question, Eric, is what really kind of threw me. I basically went through and I had a wider net, and I was more open to, you know, horses that I more quickly would have put a line through. But sure. When I saw Selenite, I was like, wow, Calumet ended up with her. But I mean, I immediately realized, I was like, and you know, by the way, Cosmonaut just died last week. I don't think I had mentioned that. And he couldn't have been all that old either. He was at Old Friends. So anyway, this is tricky. I had Brad Cox on the other day, and I asked them about Como Square. This is a Caddo River sibling that, by all rights, for John Ed Anthony, that, you know, on pedigree should be a standout in here. I didn't sense that he expected her to, you know, to romp either. So I don't know. This is not going to be easy.
Yeah. Now, this is where you, last day of the year, you take your shots and all that, and I appreciate you helping out here. This we got such a great cause that it's going to go for, too, when we're able to cash these tickets. We've got a really neat affiliation with a local group that helps homeless veterans and their families. And
nice.
A lot of job retraining and whatnot. And just good people that have regular jobs that in their spare time, you know, go above and beyond and help, you know, our veterans that, you know, we just, all we can do and say thank you for, and these people go out of their way to do whatever they can for them. So we're glad to be able to help them today.
Well, and I saw where a veteran was acknowledged yesterday in advance.
Yeah, I fell for one there. but it was much appreciated, and you know, our relationship with the horsemen here is really, really good, and thank the HBPA for that award. I'm finding a great spot right in the middle of my wall to put that, because I was proud of that. But yeah, Rachel, just when I think, you know, I know her like the back of my hand, but she slips one in there where you go, okay, you got me. So
I love it. What was your service? Talk about your service.
Well, experience. I'm not a veteran. And that was part of the trick. But she told me we're going to honor a veteran, which is really important to me. I come from a family both my parents are buried at a military cemetery in Minneapolis. You know, I grew up where it wasn't an option to respect the military. It was just what we did. And so we kind of go out of our way for veterans and those folks around here. So she knew the right card to play to get me down to that winner's circle, and I wasn't about to miss meeting this veteran. Lord, I know it was a trick to get me there, but I really appreciated that award.
Nice. I love it. Eric Hallstrom, well done, and congratulations to everybody in Indiana on just a spectacular season, and the innovations, the things you're willing to try, and the way in which you've, you know, reached out to you know, acknowledge horse players every opportunity you have, and we look forward to 2022.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate the partnership more than you know, so thanks.
Eric Hallstrom, everybody, and Indiana Grand, and it wraps up today with this big project, this Pick 5 Challenge that we're all scurrying. We all want to get some bragging rights out of it and raise some money. They're going to play these tickets, so anything that hits is going to be for charity. So very cool. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll visit with Tony Black. Got Sean Clancy coming. Bill Downs and I will handicap the Pick 5. Got Pat McKenna on opening day at Aqueduct. Want to get put a bow on the Belmont season. And got to get to Rich Eng. I'm embarrassed that we never talked to Rich leading in. Although, you know, he was selling. He's got his analysis that was up at BrizNet, and everybody, Gus, Rich Eng, Dick Powell, all with excellent results from Breeders' Cup. Back after this, Tony Black will talk about the trouble in the gate, and I also want Tony to address, you know, how you come into a jurisdiction that has got, you know, a limited number of, you know, of the crop use, and how you change your habit and practice Got to be a challenge. So, Tony Black after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match